Hey, it's Abby Garvey with Simplify 101, and I'd like to welcome you back to Organize Your Paper Clutter. This is lesson two, and in this lesson, we are going to learn the paper decision-making process. So I hope you enjoyed lesson one and that you've set some compelling goals for organizing your paper. Just think how great it's going to feel when all of your paper clutter is transformed into paper order. And you'll know exactly where to put a piece of paper when it comes into your home, and you'll know just where to look for it when it comes time to retrieve it again. That's going to feel just wonderful. So that's the ultimate goal of this workshop, and during lesson two, you'll be taking the next step towards that goal by learning a decision-making process for your paper. So as you listen to this lesson, I want you to keep something in mind. Sorting paper is a decision-making process. A paper becomes a source of clutter for many reasons, but here's a biggie. When you pick up a piece of paper, you neglect to make a decision about what to do with it. Your piles of paper are, in essence, piles of indecision. The key to eliminating paper clutter is to become aware of the decisions that need to be made about each piece of paper that comes into your home. Sometimes paper requires action, and you have to decide what action needs to be taken and when. You also have to decide how you'll remember to take action on the paper, and you have to decide when and how and where to store it in the meantime. So it's no wonder when you think of all the decisions that go into a single piece of paper why your first impulse can be to just set it aside in that stack for later. So in this lesson, you'll learn the decision-making process for paper, as I've said. And then in upcoming lessons, you'll set up permanent storage solutions for each category of paper. The decision-making process coupled with your new paper storage systems will be key factors in eliminating your paper clutter. So when you sort your paper, your focus should be on decision-making using a series of questions that you'll learn in this lesson. The primary goal when sorting paper is to decide, there's that decide word again, which category your paper belongs in. In the last lesson, we categorized paper as welcome or unwelcome and necessary or unnecessary. In this lesson, we'll be categorizing our paper just a bit differently as unprocessed, action, reference, archive, recycle, and shred. Now, each of these categories tells us something. It tells us what you need to do with a piece of paper and where it belongs. But first, you have to decide which category each piece of paper belongs in. During this lesson, you'll also start taking action. First, you'll choose an area in which to handle your paper and set up temporary containers for each category of paper: unprocessed, action, reference, archive, recycle, and shred. Your shred container can be the shredder itself if it's practical for you to shred as you go. In future lessons, you'll set up permanent homes for each of these categories, but in this lesson, I want you to focus on sorting and understanding the decision-making process. Containers are fun, don't get me wrong, but we don't want them to become a distraction at this point in the process. So in the spirit of bite-sizing the lesson concepts so that they really sink in, use temporary systems during this lesson. Rest assured that by the end of this workshop, you'll have permanent systems and fun containers in place to hold each category of paper. All right, let's get to the sorting. The paper organizing process. Get ready to organize your paper. Getting ready to organize your paper involves two steps: clarifying your goals and setting up a well-stocked area to handle your paper. We covered the first step in lesson one. Just remember to keep that goal statement and the results you're after at the forefront of your mind while organizing your paper. When you connect with how good it's going to feel to have clutter-free surfaces and be in control of your paper, it will help you stay focused on the journey ahead. The next preparation step is to set up a well-stocked area to handle your paper. You may already have a designated spot for handling your paper, such as a desk in your kitchen or a home office. On the other hand, part of your paper trouble could be that you don't have a place set up to handle your paper. Now, the focus of this workshop is to organize your paper rather than to teach you how to set up a home office. But with that said, it is essential that you gather together some basic supplies to aid in the paper sorting process and decide where you will sort your paper, both the new paper that comes into your home on a daily basis and any backlog that you need to go through. In future lessons, we'll talk about setting up your paper storage systems and the importance of selecting the right location for each of these systems. For now, though, simply gather together a few basic supplies, temporary sorting containers, and select a location to do your sorting. Work area. To effectively sort paper, you'll need a flat surface, such as a table, desk, or countertop. Also select a comfortable chair, unless you prefer to sort while standing at a counter height surface, like I do. Here's an everyday example. I handle paper in a variety of places in my home. I do a preliminary sort of mail in my laundry room because this is off the garage, the door we use the most often. School papers are sorted on the kitchen counter. Mail and other personal paper is sorted and handled in my home office. So select a location for sorting your paper that makes sense based on how paper flows into your home and where it naturally lands. And the sorting area can be a different place from where you actually perform the tasks associated with your paperwork. Temporary sorting containers. You will need up to 7 empty containers for sorting your paper. If you have quite a bit of paper backlog to sort through, use something large like cardboard boxes or plastic bins. If you have less paper backlog, you might be able to get by using file folders instead of boxes. Label the first 5 containers or file folders as follows: collection, action, date specific, action, time flexible, reference, and archive. The last 2 containers can be used for papers to recycle or shred, as I'll discuss in just a moment. Recycle bin. Keeping a paper recycle bin inside your home makes it simple to recycle unneeded paper. Now, this doesn't have to be a conspicuous green bin, but it can be any container designated just for recycling paper. Keep this as close as possible to your sorting area. Now, if you don't have a permanent container suitable for recycling, add another temporary box or folder and label it Recycle. If recycling isn't an option for you, then just use a trash can in lieu of a recycling bin. Shredder. If you don't already own a shredder, I really want to encourage you to invest in one for safe disposal of your personal documents. Now, a shredder is a relatively small investment that can save you hours of hassle if your personal information gets in the wrong hands. I recommend using a crosscut shredder, and just be sure to keep and use your shredder away from young children. That's a really important thing to note. Now, if you don't yet have a shredder, use your 7th empty sorting container to collect your sensitive documents until you purchase a shredder. Use your shredder for safe disposal of any paper that contains personal information. Due to identity theft concerns, it's important that you shred any paper that contains identifying information, such as your name, address, signature, account numbers of any kind, such as bank, investment accounts, credit card accounts, and so on, medical information, legal information, credit card offers, and of course, your social security number. So for a complete listing of documents to shred, see the download called What Do I Need to Shred, which is included with the lesson downloads. Now, if there's no way to place a shredder near your sorting area, consider establishing a shredding container and labeling it Shred, and make this a permanent container in your area. When your container gets full, have a little shred fest, complete with happy music and a refreshing drink. If you don't enjoy the act of shredding, use a small container so you're reminded to shred smaller batches more frequently. Okay, here's a list of basic office supplies to gather together. File folders, labeling supplies to label your temporary file folders or sorting containers, pen or pencil, paper for jotting down notes and to-dos. Yes, more paper. You're going to be fighting fire with fire, or rather, paper with paper. Your calendar, stapler, staple remover, and staples. Post-it notes, paper clips, and binder clips. Okay, I'd like you to take action on these concepts. The first action step for this lesson is to set up your sorting area. Decide on a location to sort, and then gather together your temporary sorting containers and other supplies listed above. Remember, the collection containers you're implementing at this point in the process are temporary, so there's really no need to go out and spend a bunch of money on these containers. If you don't already have a shredder, I do recommend purchasing a crosscut shredder as soon as possible. And while you're at the store, consider picking up a permanent container for your recycling too, if you don't already have one. Once you have your supplies collected and a work area set up, it's time to sort. Now, at this point, I recommend that you pull out the handout paper sorting process at a glance. This gives you a quick summary of the paper sorting process that I'm going to cover, and it goes over all the questions to ask while you're sorting your paper. So it's a nice little summary of what I'm about to go over. Okay, the paper sorting process. Step one, collect. One of the first things I do when sorting paper, my own or my clients, is to corral together all the paper from a single area into a single pile. So if I'm organizing a kitchen counter that's cluttered with papers, I will collect all the papers off that countertop and place them into one pile. As you sort, gather your papers into your collection container and create this single pile. So why is it preferable to have your paper in a single pile? Well, paper becomes overwhelming, as we discussed extensively in the first lesson. So the simple act of putting your paper into a single pile creates an instant sense of order, calm, and breathing room. Immediately, things don't look so bad, so it doesn't feel so bad. And this is a big step in the right direction. The other reason for a single pile is that it will help you to focus on one piece of paper at a time while sorting. You can't pick and choose your favorite piece of paper from the bunch. Instead, you will simply start at the top of the pile and work your way down to the bottom. Now, what this does is it helps you avoid selective selection, picking the good or easy papers to deal with first, leaving you with a pile of icky stuff at the end when your energy is at the lowest. Step two, decide. So the next step in the process is to decide which category each piece of paper belongs in: action, reference, archive, recycle, or shred. Before we go further, though, let's define each of those categories. Unprocessed. The first type of paper is paper that you haven't sorted through yet. It is unprocessed, so you aren't really sure what it is, where it belongs, or what you need to do with it. You do, however, need to establish a designated spot and container for this type of paper. The system that supports your unprocessed paper is called your collection system, and the most traditional collection system is, of course, the inbox. Action. Your action pile contains paper that has an action associated with it. You need to do something as a result of getting this piece of paper. Bills, permission slips, continuing education catalogs, grocery lists, and coupons can all be examples of actionable paper. Bills need to be paid, permission slips need to be filled out and returned to school. So your action paper is the most critical to gain control over because it has a task associated with it, and often that task has a deadline. Within the action category are time-specific action papers, those with a deadline, and time-flexible actions, those that can be dealt with anytime you please. So bills are an example of time-specific action papers, while reading materials such as magazines are an example of time-flexible actions. Reference. Your reference paper has something you may want or need to refer to at a later date. This type of paper doesn't require your action at the moment, and some external event will tell you if and when you need to refer to or take action on that paper. Examples of reference paper include telephone directories, your voter ID card, sports schedules, after the dates have been entered onto the calendar, papers for a current home decorating project, and carryout menus. Think of your reference paper as things you will want to get your hands on quickly, easily, and relatively frequently. Archive. Your archive paper is similar to your reference paper, but the holding period is longer. Also, you won't want or need to retrieve your archive paper as frequently as you will need or want to retrieve your reference paper. Examples of archive paper include old tax returns, legal documents, memorabilia, art projects, and school papers you're keeping for your children. Now, as with reference paper, there's no immediate action associated with these papers, and the paper itself will not trigger an action. Recycle. Use this category for any paper you don't need. There's no action associated with it, and there's no need to refer to it later. Shred. As discussed above, your shred category is for any piece of paper you don't need that contains personal information. Okay, now that you understand the different categories, let's talk about how to decide which category each piece of paper belongs in. And we're going to get there by asking a series of questions as you sort through your paper. Question one, is this paper my responsibility? For each piece of paper you come across, first decide if it's your responsibility or the responsibility of someone else in your home. Place paper that you are not responsible for into a separate collection container, a collection container set up for the person responsible for that piece of paper. Keep in mind that during this workshop, you will be setting up systems for each category of paper, unprocessed, action, reference, and archive. Someone else in your household is responsible for handling some of the paper that comes into your home. You may need to set up duplicate systems, one for you and one for him or her. Keep in mind that the systems that work for you may not be the best systems for the other people in your home. Once you get your system set up, use what you learn in this workshop to help the other members in your household create systems that work for them. So it's important to note that there's really no one-size-fits-all solution for organizing paper, even in my house. Jay's filing system is by category, whereas mine is by month. Set up systems that work for you, and then help anyone in your home who's also responsible for paper to set up systems that work for them. Everyday example. If you're sorting paper and come across a bill and your spouse is responsible for paying the bill should go into your spouse's collection bin and ultimately into his or her paper organizing system. For household managers, it's often the case that even though a piece of paper and any action associated with it isn't your responsibility, you are ultimately responsible for overseeing the task's completion. In this case, even though the paper isn't yours, you may want to incorporate the paper into your paper systems as if it were your responsibility. Here's another everyday example. School papers are a mixed bag responsibility-wise. Some paper is your responsibility and some is your child's. When your child and his backpack arrive home from school, have your child place the papers into your collection container. Then separate the containers based on responsibility. Homework is your child's responsibility. Items like permission slips to sign and newsletters to read are your responsibility. Deciding which completed work and artwork to keep can be a joint responsibility that you make together. Okay, let's move on to the next question to ask when sorting your paper. Question two, do I need or want this paper? So this question is a simple little question, but often it's really hard to answer. Do I need this paper? What do I need to keep? How long do I need to keep it? So let's bring some coherence once and for all to these questions. Let's start with the easy no. This is your low-hanging fruit, those things that are easy to know you don't need or easy to say no to as soon as they come into your home. Consider the no the express way to Recycleville. Send your low-hanging fruit straight to the recycle bin whenever possible, remembering to shred anything that contains personal information. So here's a list of paper you don't need to keep. Catalogs. With catalogs, ask yourself if you need something from this particular store right now. Had you been planning on making a purchase from Pottery Barn before the catalog arrived in your mailbox? If the answer is no, send your catalog straight to the recycle bin, especially while you're in the process of digging yourself out of a paper backlog. Remember, every piece of paper in your midst is an obligation. Make it your goal to eliminate all of the easy obligations by sending them straight to the recycle bin. Or better yet, remove your name from the mailing list altogether, going back to what we talked about in lesson one. Store coupons. So as with catalogs, store coupons are useful if you'll be purchasing something from that store before the coupon expiration date. When you get a coupon, find the expiration date and then ask yourself if you need to buy something from this store before that date. The answer is no. Recycle, recycle, recycle. Event notices. If you get an event notice in your inbox, quickly scan the notice and ask yourself if this is an event you're likely to attend. If so, check your calendar and see if you're available that day. If you're not, send the notice to your recycle bin. Credit card offers. Okay, do you need another credit card? Shred credit card offers on the spot unless you've been shopping around for a new and better credit card. Receipts. Receipts for everyday low-ticket items do not need to be kept unless you are using them for budgeting purposes or to reconcile your bank statements. Recycle receipts for groceries or your treats from Starbucks as soon as they come in, unless you're using them for these other two purposes. Okay, so those were the easy no's. Now let's talk about the troubling, I don't know. So frankly, it can be quite confusing to know if you need to keep much of the paper that comes into your home or not. As if that weren't bothersome enough, once you do decide you need to keep something, you're faced with one of life's great mysteries. How long do I need to keep it? If you've ever done research to figure out how long you need to keep various paper records, you may find yourself even more confused after doing the research than you were before you started. There's a lot of contradictory information about what to keep and for how long. So below are the guidelines I use along with my rationale about what to keep and for what length of time. As a general rule of thumb, I recommend that if you have space to store documents, err on the side of caution. Save documents that could be needed for tax purposes for a full 7 years. If you work with a tax preparer or an attorney, seek their advice on your particular situation. These advisors will be your partners in an audit, so they should have a voice as to which records are being kept. This is particularly important if there are unique circumstances that complicate your paperwork, such as running a household business or being involved in a lawsuit. Above all, do what feels right and comfortable to you. Okay, let's start by talking about tax documents. The simple rule for tax documents is this. For 7 years, keep any document or receipt that was or will be used in the calculation of your tax return. So throughout the year, you need to collect the documents that will be needed to file your tax returns. This includes receipts for tax-deductible purchases, as well as receipts for charitable donations you make throughout the year. At the end of the year, documents such as your W-2, bank statements, and investment statements should also be added to your tax documents file. Now, for tax returns from prior years, keep the return itself, as well as the documents you use to put together the return, such as receipts for charitable donations, W-2s, bank statements, investment statements, and so on. The simplest thing to do is to store your filed returns with the documents that verify your numbers. If you sold stock and claimed a resulting income or loss on your tax returns, the documents from your stockbroker that record the basis of the profit or loss should be kept with your tax returns. So this leads to the next question, how long do I need to keep it? Well, the general rule of thumb is to hold on to tax-related items for 7 years, but there are some sources that recommend you keep your tax returns indefinitely. So here's the rationale. The IRS can randomly select you for an audit anytime during the first 3 years after you file your returns. The IRS can also raise questions about your tax returns for up to 6 years from the filing date if they suspect underreported income. However, in a case where the IRS suspects fraud, they can raise questions about your tax returns indefinitely. So in most cases, if you keep your tax returns and all the documents used to create those returns for a period of 7 years, you're covered. So why do some sources recommend that you hold onto your returns indefinitely? Well, your tax returns are your proof that you paid taxes. And in some cases, it's just better to be safe than sorry. So some people believe it's better to hold on to things indefinitely. So this kind of goes back to the original rule, which is if you have the space, hold on to those tax returns. If you don't have the space, then you need to make some other decisions. The tax documents you are collecting for next year's tax returns are reference items. The approaching tax deadline of April 15th will remind you to access these documents and file your tax returns. Tax returns and their supporting documents from prior years are part of your archive system. Legal documents. Keep legal documents indefinitely. Your legal documents include birth certificates, marriage certificates, divorce decrees, wills, death certificates, and your passport. Financial documents. Keep records to show the cost basis or value of any asset you purchase that, when sold, will become part of your taxable income. This includes assets such as your home, stocks, bonds, and so on. Hold on to the records that show the purchase price of your home and any improvements that you make to your home over the years. These documents form the basis of your home or its value at the time of sale. You also want to hold on to documents that show the purchase price, sale price, and commissions paid on stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. Since these items will be used for tax returns in the year they were sold, you will want to hold onto these documents for 7 years after the sale of the asset. So why is this? Essentially, the IRS taxes you on your income less your expenses. So in the event that you sell an asset, such as your home or another investment, such as stocks or bonds, you need documents to support your claim as to the value of that asset at the time of purchase and also at the time of sale. Warranty items. It's also a good idea to keep receipts for major purchases, such as the purchase of new appliances and, of course, your vehicles. Also hold on to receipts for maintenance work done on your vehicles. In the event that you need warranty work done on your vehicle, you'll be able to prove that you've done the appropriate maintenance. These receipts can also be helpful if you sell your vehicle, demonstrating to the dealer or a potential buyer that you've taken good care of your vehicle. Items that require more time to decide. So there's one last category of paper that falls under the umbrella of troubling I don't knows. These are items that you might want, but you're not absolutely sure at the moment. Frankly, you need more time to decide. For these items, if you can't say no in the instant, then the default answer is yes. If at the moment a piece of paper lands in your home, you can't definitively say no to it, then you must say yes for now and follow along with the rest of the decision-making process. Everyday example. A child's backpack is often stuffed with paper that requires more time to decide if you want or need it. So let's say a summer camp sign-up form comes home from school in March, but you haven't even begun to think about summer plans yet. It is impossible to decide right then if you need this piece of paper because you haven't a clue if you'll be signing your child up for summer camp. You simply need more time to decide. Your child's artwork is another example, but for completely different reasons. Frankly, it can be hard to throw away a piece of artwork the minute it walks through the door, especially if the beaming artist is still attached to it. With time and the accumulation of more artwork, this decision becomes easier. So regardless of the reason, if paper comes through the door now and it isn't a definite no because you need more time to decide, say yes for now. Question 3. Is this paper actionable? Quite simply, actionable paper has a to-do associated with it, such as paying a bill, registering for a class, or calling to RSVP. Actionable paper is often the cause of piles. You want to keep your paper out in the open so you remember to do the action associated with it. You attempt to use the paper as your reminder to perform the action. Now, if you have piles and piles of paper, you have piles and piles of proof that using a piece of paper to remind yourself to take action isn't terribly effective. To-do lists and calendars are much better reminder and task management systems. The solution to action paper clutter is twofold. First, you need to create an action system to store your actionable papers. We'll take care of that one in the next lesson. For now, place your actionable items in your container labeled Action. Second, for each actionable piece of paper you encounter while sorting, you need to put in place a trigger or a reminder to perform the associated action at the right time. Your calendar and to-do list are the perfect tools for this. Here's some everyday examples. Bills are an obvious example of actionable paper. The to-do is to pay the bill. A birthday party invitation is another example. The required actions include make a phone call to RSVP, buy and wrap a present, and attend the party. With this example, it's easy to see why the invitation isn't a good reminder to take action. There are too many actions involved. Adding buy gift to an errands list and recording the party on your calendar is much more of an effective approach. For each actionable piece of paper, ask yourself if it's time specific with a concrete deadline or time flexible. Then place into the appropriate container. Question 4. Will I want to or need to refer to this paper later? Some of the paper that comes into your home doesn't have an immediate action associated with it, but the paper contains information that you may want to refer to later. With your action paper, the paper itself is your trigger to perform an action. With non-actionable paper, something external to the paper will trigger your need to access it. This paper falls into either your reference or archive categories. Which one? Well, that depends. Think of your reference paper as things you will want to get your hands on quickly, easily, and relatively frequently. Some of it you may only need to keep for a short period of time, such as the school lunch menu, that you'll keep for the month it's active, after which time you'll replace it with the next month's menu. You'll access your archive paper less frequently, and therefore it doesn't need to be kept as easily accessible as your reference paper. Also, you will be holding on to the majority of your archive paper for years, if not indefinitely. So items such as your tax returns that you must hold on to for 7 years, your children's birth certificate, and sentimental papers are all archive. As you sort your papers, you will come across items that are clearly referenced, like the Chinese carryout menu you use every Thursday night. You will also come across items that are definitely archive, like your marriage license and the letters your grandma sent to you when you were a little girl. But you'll also come across items that could go either way. Sometimes the boundary between reference and archive categories can be a bit fuzzy, and that is okay. Don't lose sleep over this one. When we set up the storage systems for each category of paper, you may mix categories in the same storage system anyway, based upon how readily available you need certain papers to be. So as you sort, trust your gut decision about which category to put something in. If you aren't sure if it needs to be reference or archive, just think in terms of how readily available it needs to be. If you don't need it to be easy to get to, archive it. If you'd like to keep it relatively handy, put it in reference. Everyday examples. So bills. Bills begin as action items. Then, once the bill is paid, you may wish to hold on to it for future reference, for budgeting, proof of payment for insurance purposes, and so on. Sports schedules. When sports schedules come into your home, the schedule starts as an action item. You need to record the game dates and times on your calendar. Once this action is performed, however, you may want to hold on to the schedule for future reference. There may be details about the game that you don't want to record on your calendar, such as which team you're playing, but you may want to look up that information at a future date. Before you make the final decision to keep something in your reference or archive system, let me challenge you with one last question, which is this information available elsewhere? If so, is there a real benefit in keeping it? Let's say you come across an article about how to keep mosquitoes away at a summer barbecue. Information which is useful to have when you're planning a summer barbecue, wouldn't you agree? But let me ask you this. If you were planning a summer barbecue and were concerned about keeping mosquitoes away, would you look through your papers to find this info, or would you be more likely to search online for similar information? If you're tempted to save something obscure, like a secret formula for keeping mosquitoes away from a summer barbecue, but there's very little chance you'll remember you've collected that information, let it go. Pulling it all together. Okay, so I realize this is a lot to take in at once, but remember, these questions are really about teaching you a thought process so you can decide what to do with each piece of paper that makes its way into your home. In time, this thought process will become automatic, and deciding what to do with the majority of the paper that comes into your home will become intuitive. You'll pick up a piece of paper and instantly know what to do with it. In the meantime, keep the handout, The Paper Sorting Process at a Glance, in front of you to guide you through the decision-making process. All right, now, before you dive into sorting your paper, take this quick quiz to test your paper sorting knowledge. Let's say that you're sorting through your collection box and come across the following items. Can you decide how to categorize each piece of paper? What I want you to do when I say something, think through the answer. I'm going to pause and then I'm going to read you the answer. But before, during that pause, I want you to think through the answer. And you can even pause your device, your computer or iPod or whatever you're listening to me on right now. Push pause and really think through what the answer to that question is. And then I will share the rationale for each item. Okay, a utility bill. Here's the rationale for a utility bill. If the utility bill still needs to be paid, it goes in the action, date-specific category. There's a to-do associated with it, and that to-do has a deadline. Now, if the bill has already been paid and there's no action associated with it, it goes to the archive. A wedding invitation. So whether you know if you can attend the wedding or not, a wedding invitation is an action item. The action may be to RSVP and say no, followed with another action to buy or send a gift. or the action may be to decide if you will be attending the wedding or not. Either way, the invitation requires action. Your son's soccer schedule. A soccer schedule starts out as an action item. You need to record the individual game dates and times in your planning system. After you do that, you can keep the schedule in your reference system. For now, though, it's off to your action box. A monthly bank statement. Now, if you want to balance your bank account, the bank statement is an action item. If you aren't going to balance your account, then this item goes into reference or archive, depending on if it will be used for putting together your tax returns this year. Your child's artwork from school. Artwork. Oh, this has a sentimental feeling to it, doesn't it? You probably really want to keep this, but you know you can't keep everything. Does that sound familiar? Now, if you aren't sure if you need yet another piece of artwork, put this in your action time flexible bin. You'll decide the fate of this piece of artwork once time has passed and you've accumulated more art. Your favorite restaurant's carryout menu. So since you'll likely be calling this restaurant many times in the next few months, this item should go into reference so that it's easy to get your hands on. The receipt from your last gas purchase. Now, if you're tracking fuel purchases for personal budgeting, the receipt should go in your action bin. If you don't track expenses or need this receipt for tax reasons, say hello to the recycle bin. Now, before pitching, just be sure to check the receipt for any personal information. Your new passport. Your passport is an archive item. You will hold on to this indefinitely. This one, however, is a great example of the fuzzy boundaries between archive and reference. Now, based on the fact that you are going to hold on to this indefinitely and it's a legal document, it is technically archive. However, if you travel out of the country very frequently, you may want to keep this with your other reference materials so that it's easy to get your hands on it when it comes time to leave. Next item, a paint swatch for the bathroom that you plan to paint this weekend. Okay, a paint swatch is an action item since you will use the swatch to purchase paint for your weekend painting project. A coupon for 40% off one item at Borders this weekend only. Okay, this is a good coupon. 40% is compelling, but do you need a new book? And will you have time to shop this weekend with all that painting going on? If the answer to either of these questions is no, recycle the coupon. If you do need a book and have time to shop for one this weekend, add Borders to your errands list and put the coupon in your purse. Take action. Sort your daily papers. So one of the essential habits I'd like to encourage you to create during this workshop is to deal with today's paper today. Now, don't get me wrong, this isn't a touch-it-once type of rule that will have you fearing your paper. Instead, the idea is to create a habit of processing your paper or making decisions on it on a regular basis. Continue to spend 15 minutes a day moving forward on your paper organizing projects, giving your primary focus to the paper that makes its way into your home today. Sort your paper using the temporary sorting containers and the decision-making process outlined in this lesson. Remember, decide first, take action second. Just be sure to take that second step if you uncover any time-specific action papers during your sorting. So here's the takeaway from this lesson. We've covered a lot of ground, but here are the key points that I'd like you to take away and keep in mind as you continue to take action on these concepts. Remember that sorting paper is a decision-making process. First, decide which category your paper belongs in, then take action. This decision-making process, understanding which category each piece of paper belongs in, is the first step in organizing your paper clutter. The concepts in this workshop are like building blocks. Properly categorizing your paper lays the foundation for setting up systems that will work for you. Also, remember the importance of taking action on the workshop concepts. Make it a goal during the course of this workshop to take action on your paper each and every day. Allocate 15 minutes for this task. You may find it takes even less time to stay on top of your daily paper. But if you reinforce the class concepts by dealing with your paper each and every day, you'll find the concepts will really sink in by the end of the class. The decision-making process covered in this lesson will start to become second nature. You'll pick up a piece of paper and know right away what to do with it, leaving you with clear and clutter-free surfaces. And won't that feel good? I think it will. So let's look ahead real quick to the next lesson, where we'll continue to build on the foundation you've laid during these first two lessons. During lesson three, you'll learn about the various storage solutions available for storing your paper. Plus, you'll learn how to select what is best for you. You'll also set up your collection and action systems, creating permanent homes for these essential paper systems. Until next lesson, happy organizing!